SportsDrinking.com's Porchcast, brought to you by OnTap Credit Union, crafting individual financial solutions for people who brew great beer, the breweries that produce great beer, and the communities where they all reside and do business. The Porchcast is also supported by Made by Chalk, who can help with all of your brewery branding, logo design, and website design needs.
And now, the Porchcast.
All right, everyone, and welcome to a special Summit County edition. It's a big beers edition of the Porchcast, episode 57. Once again, this is Tristan Chan and co-host Hunter Grondin. What's up, Grondin?
Hello.
We are up here for a special big beers weekend, and we decided to drop in to see our friends here at Outer Range, Emily and Lee Cleghorn. How's it going, you guys?
It's going great. Thanks so much for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you guys sitting in. For those of you who have been following the beer scene for the past year, 2 years, you've probably heard of Outer Range at this point. And if you're stopping into the mountains, you've definitely probably stopped in. One of the hot new breweries on the scene here in Colorado. And we couldn't pass up this opportunity to speak with you guys. You all are doing fantastic work. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
So why don't we get started with this? We always like to hear a little bit about everybody's story. So tell us about how Outer Range came to be. I know you guys spent some time on the East Coast before coming out here, but tell us your story.
Yeah, but it all did start in Colorado. We were both stationed at Fort Carson in Colorado Springs. And one night this guy asked me, a friend of mine said, hey, do you want to go brew beer at this guy's house in Manitou Springs? And this was before homebrewing was like so popular. And I was like, at a guy's house? We're not going to a brewery to learn about it? And Manitou's kind of a funky town, so I was like, I got to see this. And so the first time we ever met,
Surprise, spoiler alert.
So we actually homebrewed the first night we ever met, which was pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, had her washing bottles, saw the work ethic. Really
passed the test.
She's going to do. She'll do.
He's like, this is so great.
It's like your own version of The Bachelor.
We actually got engaged 4 months later.
Wow.
Yeah,
so that
you did a really great job of watching those.
Yeah, this really is like the bachelor, the brew bachelor. Here's a rose, here's a ring.
Well, it wasn't just about me. Luckily, the beer turned out. So
the beer turned out is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Awesome. This beer's infected.
Yeah,
ring.
So we were always kind of, our relationship was always built around beer. And so that's how it started. I got into beer really young. My dad was in the Army, and he was stationed in Brussels. And we moved there I was like 15. The drinking age was 16. So I was drinking, Chimay Blue at, 15, 16 years old, and blew my mind and just spent the next couple of years doing that. And then moved back to the States. And that's how I got into homebrewing. So I was 18 years old and everybody was drinking, Natty. And I couldn't do it. And so learned how to homebrew.
You're like, I gotta step it up.
I gotta take control of this.
Yeah.
So then, we were still in the Army. So the Army kind of kicked us around for a while, and we deployed again after our daughter was born. At that point, he missed her first steps. He missed her first words. He missed her first birthday. And so that was kind of after his third deployment and missing out on all that. He came back, and homebrewing had always been his outlet through all the hardships in the Army. And so I was like, let's do it. And at first he thought I was crazy, but I saw his passion for it and I saw how talented he was. And that was the impetus after that deployment. We're like, we're going to do this. We're going to do it right.
Cool.
That's awesome. When we went to the East Coast. We decided to, we had just been in the military our whole career, so we didn't really have business skills. So we went through business school while Lee was going through the American Brewers Guild course. I got marketing internships while he got a brewing internship at other half. And we just pushed really hard with a two-year-old in tow to
So you all were in school with a two-year-old and going through internships at the same time.
Andy was going through
the brewing school at the same time.
Well, just getting out of the military.
It was great. It was really great.
He actually got walking pneumonia. They said it was the worst case they'd ever seen. And this was at St. Anthony's in New York. Like, they see a lot of stuff. They said it was their worst case of pneumonia they'd ever seen in a guy.
A little stressed, dude.
It all worked out. You
take like one week off.
When she first was like, we should do the brewery, I thought she was crazy. I was like, we need to wait till we're older, till we have money, because we didn't have any money.
Sure.
And I'm glad we didn't, because it's so hard to start a brewery.
Oh, absolutely.
I couldn't do it.
It's a young person's game, right?
I wouldn't be able to do it when I'm 50 years old, 60 years old. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But we wanted to come back out to the mountains. You know, that's where we got our start. It's really where we, you know, we thought that our home should be, and we wanted to, you know, plant the brewery out in the mountains. And we just lucked out that we found this space in Frisco, because we used to come up here all the time to Summit County. We got engaged in Keystone. We got married in Vail.
You know, that's awesome. That day, yeah, Keystone, got married in Vail.
Yeah, so we're just like every other, you know, Colorado person who spends every weekend up in the mountains. And so we lucked out and found this space, and the space has been incredible for us here in Frisco. Community's been amazing. And we just celebrated 2 years. We've been open a little over 2 years.
Congratulations, yeah. Now, tell us a little bit about, you know, your all's focus since the very beginning was Belgian styles, and also even more so now, hazy kind of New England style IPAs. I'm guessing you got a lot of that training from your time at Other Half, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the two styles, you know, our whole philosophy was that we just wanted to do, you know, we wanted the brewery to be something we were passionate about, and we knew that would only be the case if we just did what we were passionate about. So these are the two styles of beer that we're passionate about, and so we decided to focus on that first. And there's enough great breweries in Colorado where we feel like we have the room to do that. And the, you know, beer drinkers are so sophisticated out here that we didn't get a lot of pushback. We got a little bit when we first opened up from a couple tourists who came through.
Yeah, especially up here, because it's you know, you get so many tourists that aren't necessarily sophisticated craft beer drinkers, and so they expect you to have a lager, a stout, et cetera, et cetera. And so when we first opened, people were so confused, and there was one guy, I was actually bartending at the time, he asked for a Pilsner, and I said, we don't have a Pilsner, but I would recommend the French Farmhouse, and he said, I wanted a Pilsner, and he threw his stool down and stormed out.
Gosh.
It was just interesting to me, because
it's like, dude, you're
that's
in the
like
mouth.
Me, actually.
Out.
That's like me. That's me.
Well, Pilsner's dim. Except he's over here drinking blots of light.
I would like to think that I'm actually sophisticated, but I definitely like good Pilsners.
You know, his experience in Belgium, too, showed, you know, some of the best breweries in the world focus on literally one or two styles.
Yeah.
And they've endured, you know, decades and have still stayed at the top, and it's still been successful. And so that was the model we decided to take after, was let's stay focused, and hopefully we stay focused and we iterate and iterate and become the best at what we're focused on, we'll be able to endure long term. It's kind of that was our mindset.
Absolutely.
Smart.
Yeah. You guys have done a killer job, and you know, even now, like, hopefully that guy can come back and enjoy a table beer, because, you know, there's, I feel like,
I'm so happy that you noticed that.
I love
beers.
Table beer. Yeah. I love table beers. Yeah. And, but now even so, I, you know, over at Big Beers this weekend, you all, we're pouring a stout, I believe, right? Yeah.
We did. So that's it. We have done two stouts so far. So we did our first one as a collaboration with Mike from Microphone in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Obviously he makes amazing stouts. And so that's a lot of fun to do that.
Really good.
Yeah.
One of them.
And then we did, you know, our second one, which we did solo, took the training wheels off and did it ourselves. And it turned out, you know, outside of our wheelhouse, I think we'll do a couple more as we go forward, but we'll keep our focus on, you know, Belgians and IPAs.
Yeah, cool. What's been your biggest learning since in your first 2 years since opening the brewery?
Man, I mean, the worst part about opening a brewery is there's so many things that don't have to do with beer.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You got to focus on those, you know, running the company and, you know, managing a team. And we've been super fortunate with a great team from the outset. Mm-hmm. So that's been just phenomenal for us. And we wouldn't have gotten all the accolades we've gotten without them. You know, our bartenders are amazing.
So Tor's got a really good reputation around the state, too.
Yeah.
He's being an awesome guy.
Yeah. So that's been the biggest surprise, just the focus on non-beer-related things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I would say managing growth, too. Our first year, we did 800 barrels. And our second year, we did 2,300.
Wow.
And, you know, we're very cognizant of growing responsibly, so we don't, so the quality stays there.
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot of breweries grow too quickly or grow too much.
You guys are good. We're just recording.
We're recording a podcast. Yes.
And so we're very mindful of that. But it's been a challenge, especially with our space. Mm-hmm. You see how tiny our space is.
I was going to say, you know, at 2,300, is there more room for growth available with the space?
Yeah, right now, if you analyze what we're doing right now, we're doing about 3,000, maybe a little bit over.
Sure.
We can maybe go to like 4,200,
okay,
and then that's going to be it. Gotcha. Space, so.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys upgrade your brew house size at one point?
No, we've always had the 15 barrel. We did start out, I had a pilot system,
okay,
one barrel pilot system, but that just like broke me because I was brewing on,
and then that keg was gone tomorrow.
I was brewing on that and the 15 barrel at the same time. I do two batches at the same time.
Oh my gosh. Running back and forth. That's intense.
So we finally sold that, which was fantastic.
Yeah. And you all chose to start canning very early on, right? Was it from the onset, or was it shortly thereafter?
It was 6 months in.
Yeah, okay. From the marketing side, I just felt like if we could get something out there with our logo on it quickly, that would, our local population is only 2,500.
Sure.
And so to really reach the bigger people in the Front Range and everything, we felt like we had to get to cans as quickly as possible. Once we felt ready, once we had iterated our recipes enough that we felt like, you know, we were proud of what we put out there in cans, we went ahead and went for it.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people that were coming up on the weekends for your guys' can releases.
Yeah.
Well, you guys did a good job, though, by making sure people knew, like, the beer was solid. Like, everything you guys launched with right away, like, got attention, including myself, a lot of brewers I brought in, actually, early on. When you guys started can releases, it was kind of like, oh, awesome. And I know that beer is going to be good. If I'm going to drive, you know, an hour and a half to go get it, I'm not going to go buy something that I'm going to regret on.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of friends that were coming up from the beer industry. Like, yeah, I'm going to Outer Range this weekend. It was like they planned their weekend around the can release.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go mountains, go for a hike, go get some cans from Outer Range. Yeah.
Well, I definitely think our setting helps a lot because it's not like you're coming in the middle of nowhere. But
totally.
Hiking and ski resorts and everything. We're hoping people will have a lot of reasons to come up here.
Yeah, that's true. There's a win-win.
Day out of it, yeah.
And then, I mean, the reception from the Colorado beer community from the outside was so phenomenal. Everybody's so open to us, welcoming. That part really is a big part of our success.
I appreciated your guys' like branding right away too.
Yeah,
and it wasn't, you guys to me weren't like another mountain brewery. It like you had your own image. I mean, obviously there's some mountain themes with your names and stuff, and like with like Pillow Stacks and Sendy. I get it.
Yeah.
I get what's like the angle, but it's still like this edginess for a brewery in the mountains versus, sorry to all the breweries that like love bluegrass, but like not another kind of like all color wooden taproom with like bluegrass music and like you were saying, Pilsner Porter Stout IPA. It was like, I could tell it was you guys.
Yeah, brew the colors.
Yeah. Our time in New York really influenced us too. And so we did want to bring some of that edge and kind of speak to that kind of urban person who wants to escape that the clutter of being in the city and come out to this mountain setting.
Yeah.
But still have an environment that feels a little bit like their city life.
Yeah.
So that's what we really were going for. That we want to go for more of like a Nordic clean mountain branding.
See that?
So I appreciate that.
Yeah. And as right away I saw it, I was like,
I was going to say, let's touch on the labels a little bit because the label work is beautiful.
Yeah.
One of the things that I love about any of your can releases is just being excited to see like what the labels are going to look like. Cause, is that done in house or do you all source it out to someone?
We have one graphic designer.
Oh, cool.
Diana, she finally settled down, but for the first year and a half here in business, she was driving around in an Airstream.
Oh my.
And so sometimes you get to a campsite, you're like, Emily, like, I have no service, so if you need a can design, like, we need to talk about this, conceptualize it now, and then I'll get back to you in like 5 days.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was so great. At first I was a little nervous because she's not here.
Yeah.
So I was like, no.
Living that van life.
Yeah.
She's like, exactly. Like, she embodies our brand.
Yeah.
She is out there all the time. She is, like, out of range, driving up and down the West Coast in her Airstream. She's now settled in Oregon.
Okay.
But I do think her being away has helped, too, so you don't get that, like, group thing. So I would come up with a concept, and I would tell her, like, my vision for it, and then she'd iterate and be like, okay, well, you know, what I'm thinking is this. And then I think between the two of us, me being here and her being away has actually been a great asset to get that kind of outside view so I don't just get the same old thoughts going.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I agree from the brewing perspective. Sometimes I see like the label they come up with, and I'm like, oh God, this beer really better be good.
The label's better than the beer.
Because I want this to work, and I want to keep doing it.
Yeah.
I feel the opposite. I'm like, I know it's going to be fire, so this label better represents
the beer. That's cool. That's good teamwork.
Now, what? Lee, one of the biggest profiles of, you know, of your beer in particular is the incredible use of hops. Tell us a little bit about your process in determining what hop profile you're wanting to utilize. And also, the harder part is probably sourcing those hops in some cases. Tell us a little bit about all of that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so one of the reasons we brewed so many different IPAs, we're just like every other beer drinker out there. We just want to keep trying new hops, new beers, and see what they're like. One of the things I've learned just from, you know, having the benefit of having good friends in the industry who make good beer and talking to them was the number one thing that's the most important is you got to spend money on the beer. So you can't make these beers by trying to cut costs. You just have to look at the ingredients, see what's going to work, and you got to spend money on it, and it'll pay out in the end.
Right.
So that was our whole philosophy the first year. We lost money the first year, but we knew it would eventually pay off. And I think we might be getting there, but I'm not sure. And the first year was really hard sourcing hops. We didn't have any contracts. We were very small. We're really excited now because we just contracted for the first time where we can select varieties or select lots from Yakima Chief. So that was fantastic. And the beers that we've used with their hops have been incredible. Biggest thing I've learned is that, you know, the hop lots, they matter. Where you're getting the hops matter. How they're stored really matters. We were talking about Way Down, you guys are drinking right now. And I love that beer, but a couple times we brewed it, it's kind of just missed it maybe a little bit. And finding a great source of hops has really been a big difference for us. So that's hard to do on a small level. As far as like my hopping philosophy, you know, it's changed a little bit recently. We just upped the dry hopping rates a little bit. But we generally try to give a little bit of bitterness backbone to the beers. I know when we first came out, people were like, oh, these are bitter, you know, New England style beers, but to us, we were just making what we liked. Our biggest thing is finding a good source of hops and just using a lot of them. I've been like brewed because our taproom is very small. I've been brewing sometimes with like other brewers there and just dump hops in the kettle. They're like, you're using that many hops? Like, yeah, we're using that many hops.
Well, I want to say something too about opposite of the hops. However you guys are malting your New England style and hazy IPAs, it's really well done too. I'm early on, I was really picky about the style because I had a lot of sad attempts, and the ones that were really bad were the ones that were like overly spicy. And I was like, I think you guys forgot that you have to have malt in this beer too. Like hops are breaking through.
Yeah.
Like I could truly taste like a black pepper and like spice on my tongue.
Well, that's a real challenge with these because you're dry hopping so much.
Yeah.
To get that hop burn to dissipate in time.
Yeah, I don't like it.
So there's a balance. You can't just keep adding more and more hops.
Yeah.
But as far as the malt base, I think that's one of the biggest, you know, I don't think now, but when these were first starting to come out, I think that was one of the biggest overlooked parts in styles of malt base.
I agree.
We used a lot of British malts, lots of those when we first started. Now we're kind of running all over the place with Pilsen malt. It's kind of cool because you get really light colored beers with Pilsen base malt for, you know, these New England styles. Malt backbone is huge.
Now we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about big beers. But hang tight, this is episode 57 of the Porchcast. We'll be back in just a second.
On Tap Credit Union, member owned, Colorado proud. You're passionate about beer, we're passionate about crafting financial solutions for you. On Tap Credit Union has supported brewery employees for over 64 years. We listen carefully to your needs and make sure you have the right services, low-cost loans, and expert financial advice for you, your business, and your employees. Whatever your needs may be, tap into the services at OnTap Credit Union. That's www.ontapcu.org.
We also want to take this opportunity to remind you about our friends at Made by Chalk. Chalk specializes in creating brand experiences for the craft brewing industry. From product packaging to websites, apps, and events, Chalk services are tailored for independently owned craft breweries, maltsters, and industry-related consumer products. If you're looking for premium branding for your brewery or a new concept for your web design needs, visit madebychalk.com. Once again, that's madebychalk.com.
All right, folks, once again, you're listening to The Porchcast. This is episode 57. Be sure to follow us on all of your listening devices, on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Play, whatever you're listening to, be sure to give us a little follow. Once again, we're here at Outer Range here in Frisco, Colorado, with Emily and Lee Cleghorn, co-founders of Outer Range, also joined by my co-host, Hunter Grandin.
Still here.
Still here. guys, one of our favorite things of the year to kick favorite ways to kick off the year is actually the Big Beers, Belgians, and Barley Wines Festival, which is why we're up here this weekend, in addition to seeing you all, of course. But it's right up the street in Breckenridge. And have you guys, before you attended last year, did you all get a chance to attend the festival, or was last year the first year?
Last year was the first year we attended it. Cool. We tried to attend it when we first opened, but we had been open about a week, and we screwed up by not hiring any bartenders and doing things like that.
So. Still doing it yourself.
I was part of that problem. I was here, too. I came in, and I was like, oh, everyone else knows about Outer Range. Yeah. It's not just me.
So last year was our first year, and it was amazing. You know, last year we were able to do a pairing with Adam Dooley on that Friday night. That was phenomenal. He's obviously an amazing chef. From the Brewers Association. Yep. And chef of the Brewers Association. So that was really great. And got to sit on that panel with Weldworks and Cerebral and New Belgium to talk about hazy IPAs. And that was a blast too. But you know, there's so much good beer at Big Beers. Breweries really come and just like throw down. So last year really opened my eyes to that, and yesterday was fantastic as well. I mean, I hadn't had a lot of like Blackberry Farms. I was able to have that yesterday. I really enjoyed those guys' side project. Some of the beer I really enjoy too is Westbound and Down. I think a lot of brewers talk about Westbound and Down. You know, they're not like, you know, on like the big canning scene or anything, but those guys make great beer.
Yep. Yeah, they've been coming out with some really, really great releases, growing their sour program, their barrel aging program in general. And I believe they're having their stout release, the bourbon barrel aged stout release next weekend. They also have the coconut variant and the vanilla variant as well. Very impressed with Westbound and Down this past weekend. For you guys, having this being such a central stop along the way, how does Big Beers affect your all's traffic and visitorship during the weekend?
Well, I mean, you know, Thursday and Friday night, like every brewer ever is in the tap room, which is really cool. Of course, this Thursday because things were jammed up, we had to do a double brew and can, and we were doing a collab with Microphone, so they were coming in and we clogged our heat exchanger. Big mess, but so we didn't get to spend a lot of time with everybody, but that's been one of the best parts, and you see all these brewers come in and maybe have never met or haven't seen in a few months, and yeah, it's been great.
I mean, ski season's already crazy on the weekends.
Yes.
It's like there's six ski resorts within 20 minutes of us.
Yep.
But we always love Big Beers because it's actually other industry people.
It's a big party, right?
Yep. A lot of
yeah, for those listening who may not be as familiar, Big Beers is one of our favorite festivals of the year, just as, you know, both fans and industry folk. Highly recommend people checking it out if they haven't had a chance to get out here. It's one of those iconic destination festivals that's absolutely worth coming out to. We've been attending for probably the past 6 years, just through covering porch drinking and whatnot. And the Lodge family, they do such a great job of curating a complete weekend of programming in terms of education. There's yoga, there's like cigar pairings, there's lots of food pairings. And then now there's grown to have all these really cool events around the festival in the town of Breckenridge as well. The move to Breckenridge, I think, has been really awesome because it's added a lot more programming and opportunities.
Well, the town of Breckenridge is great, too.
They embrace it.
Yeah, I really enjoy being in Breck. It's like a real mountain town. You know, they've got a lot of great bars, a lot of great restaurants.
Uller Fest
is going on Thursday night. Actually, I hate it Thursday night.
we were trying to deliver kegs during Uller Fest while Main Street was shut down.
Yeah,
and I was
we got up Thursday evening, and I was like, of course, this is sure.
Yeah.
Perfect story,
right?
Yeah, every single bar was packed. I couldn't like find anywhere to go into and just like sit.
Yeah. But Hunter and I were talking, you know, it was kind of cool too because you know, Ullerfest, for those who aren't as familiar, is kind of this yearly celebration to kind of kick off and like pray to the snow gods.
Parade's funny.
And, yeah. and immediately yeah. after the parade, it started snowing, and it was like kind of a magical yeah. moment, right?
Yeah. 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 It did well, for like 24 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bonfire is hysterical. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like things were going to turn there really quickly, though. It started, people were a little, you know,
yeah. We did Madeline last year to the parade, and then they did the shot ski, and everything changed. Really, like, I was like, I got
yeah, we got to get it. Yeah.
And that's our cue.
Yeah.
Hunter, did you have any standouts from the festival yesterday?
Beer-wise?
Yeah, beer-wise.
I want to, actually, I was telling everybody this, I was very impressed by everything. In the past, I've found some beers that I was kind of, I don't know why you brought this, it wasn't terrible, but not really up to like the standard that most breweries have at big beers. And yesterday, I enjoyed mostly everything. I thought everyone's stout game was on point. There's a lot of like bourbon barrel-aged stouts, a lot of variants of those stouts, but everyone I had, I was really impressed. After everyone, I told myself too, I'm like, okay, I'm done having stouts. And then I get to the next brewery, I'm like, okay, I'll try your stout too. I never gave up, actually, and I really appreciated it. There was some good. I had a Doppelbock from Lone Tree. So there were some good beers, like break up the big beer,
a little bit of
trend. Yeah, a little bit of variety in there. But that was fun. I was laughing. I think I was talking, I can't remember, with another brewery about actually just bringing up some like Pilsner cans next year. Yeah, and like just offering it to some brewers, like, hey, we brought a Pilsner if you want to like break for a minute.
They drank a lot of the hot water yesterday.
How was that?
Fantastic. It was we had a grisette we pulled out later in the night, so that was helpful.
Definitely helpful.
I remember Upslope a couple years back had like a 2% beer that they like, it was like the most petite saison, I think is what they called it, or something like that. But I really loved, like you were saying, a lot of the bourbon barrel stouts that I had were really impressive. I mean, the blend beer barrel time from Side Project was killer. For me, one of my favorites was Amalgam's bourbon barrel stout, which was a blend that they did just for this festival. And then Crooked Stave, actually, they busted out their bourbon barrel stout. I think it was in Heaven Hill Barrels. The only time I've ever had a clean barrel stout from them was during Stout Month, like 2 years ago. From Mountain Sun's yearly celebration in February. And this beer was just like I remembered. It was incredible.
Cool.
It was really, really well done.
I want to say I did try, for the first time, two different beers from Four Hands that I really liked. I never had any of their stuff before out of St. Louis. Yeah, I had a barley wine that was delicious, and then another different stout that was also just dialed. But I've heard about that brewery, never tried anything, and I think they're getting overlooked. They're kind of in the corner on the main floor, and people are walking past them, and I really enjoyed those beers.
Yeah, I also really loved our mutual friend did the peach sour and then also the cherry sour. Peach was really great. Was one of my
peach
favorites.
Cobbler from Weldworks. Or not Weldworks, Wiley I'm sorry,
Roots.
Wiley Roots. Yeah, it was really good, too.
Yeah. I actually stole one of those cans and I drank it last night.
It was really good.
That was phenomenal. Yeah. Those beers are great.
Yep.
One of the things I missed, I wish I'd done, is their seminar they did on the Many Faces of Brett or something like that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So maybe they'll throw that up online.
There's so much. Yeah. There's just so much to do this weekend. So
yeah, it's tough to cover it all.
Yeah,
and not to mention you're like bumping into somebody you know every five steps.
Yeah. And it's cool. I mean, you had like Adam Avery's in there pouring his own beer.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
That's really awesome.
I'm always impressed too because you would think it would be total drunken fest with 70% or higher.
Yeah.
I feel like they've created this culture where people respect the beer that's there and they're not there.
Truly, like 1 ounce pours. Yeah.
Respect.
Yeah.
It could go south pretty quickly, but
I've seen people in the past like passed out in the corner, you know, or someone's having to escort somebody out. Yeah. Nothing
those,
like
those
crazy,
bowls of bread always are always super helpful.
Bread.
Yeah. This year you're right. Yes. This year seemed pretty well mannered.
Yeah. For sure. Well, thank you all so much. Once again, we really appreciate you guys having us up here. We're actually, for those who may not have been up here before, we're actually broadcasting from a yurt that's actually located right on site. So
double insulated yurt.
Yeah, yes. Double insulated.
With the Dyson heater.
This is a really impressive experience for those who want to come up and experience something really unique. Drinking in this yurt in the mountain town is kind of the perfect
setting. Return the glassware.
Yeah. But check your purses,
Emily.
Tomorrow when you get here,
Emily and Lee, thank you all so much. We really appreciate you guys having us. You guys are doing fantastic stuff. We really, really highly encourage anybody who, you know, is in the area in Colorado, make the trip up. You're not going to regret it. But like they said, there's so much, you know, so many other attractions here to draw you. But be sure to stop in, and check out Outer Ranch here in Frisco on the way to the mountains.
Thanks so much for having us.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And hopefully we'll see you here in the summertime. We can come and check out the mountain scenery up here too. So, Hunter, thanks for joining us again.
Check you later.
Check you later. We'll catch you later. This is the Porchcast on PorchTripping.com.
Like what you're listening to? Be sure to follow the Porchcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and whatever listening devices you may follow. You can also follow Porch Drinking on Twitter and Instagram at @PorchDrinkingCO.